Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I'm delighted to welcome you back to another episode of The Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2433 with our friend Gabriel Custodiat, whom I got to know about because of either a member of one of my programs or somebody brought him to my attention. And then I looked into him and thought, how do I not know about this guy? I feel like this is somehow my fault. And I've just had a chance to read his really quite overwhelming book, if I may put it that way, The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital, Financial, and Lifestyle Freedom. And we're going to talk about some of the themes in that book today. It goes into such detail that, honest to goodness, this is the tip of the iceberg today, and you should definitely check that and all the other resources Gabriel has for yourself. So, Gabriel, welcome to the show.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm not too surprised you hadn't heard of me. I talk about all the things that would get one shadow banned, literally all of them.
And yet somehow we overcame it, doggone it. Through what means? Through the old-fashioned one person talking to another person method, you know, which still does work even in this Orwellian time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
All right. So I want to start with topics that aren't so technical, but that I think you have to get them out of the way. And you have a section toward the end of your book where you take them on. And it must seem tiresome after a while for somebody who is committed to privacy in all its forms to have to answer objections that just seem so frivolous. But yet, I think in the back of our minds, a lot of people have these objections. And by objections, I mean arguments against your position. Why should people be so hyper-concerned about privacy? And so if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to just run a few of these by you. So one of them is, why should I worry about any of this? Quote, I have nothing to hide. Now, by the way, before we go into that, that was the argument that we heard from the federal government quite a bit, especially after 9/11, that, you shouldn't worry about any of this stuff because if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to worry about. So I was testifying before a congressional committee about auditing the Fed, and I tried using that line on them. I said, look, if the Fed isn't doing anything wrong, it has nothing to worry about us auditing it. And you'll be surprised to learn, Gabriel, the argument doesn't work in the reverse. It doesn't work on them. It's only supposed to work on you. So why is it that if I have, quote, nothing to hide, I should, in effect, order my affairs as if I do?
Well, look, whoever says that, I completely agree. I completely agree with them. Mostly because it means that they're probably a boring husk of a human being with state-approved morality, no interesting ideas, and no brain cells left to process the word cybercrime. So nothing to hide? Whoever tells that to me, I completely agree. In general, though, I have stopped proselytizing for privacy because I've decided that a lot of people just, they don't get it, and I don't want to talk to those people. You know, I want to talk to the people that do get it. And the people who do get it understand that we have $10 trillion of cybercrime per year, which is an astronomical amount, and that the data that you share on the internet is a big part of why that happens. The people who come to me looking for privacy understand that if you live in a country, of which there are around a dozen in the world, where you can receive the death penalty for being gay, and you're using something like Facebook, which is so sophisticated, it can out you in just a few clicks. They understand the importance of privacy. The people who have domestic partners who are harassing them or stalking them, they understand the importance of privacy. So I've stopped proselytizing for privacy. And to be honest, Tom, I have moved a little bit in the direction of open source intelligence gathering, which is OSINT, which allows you to actually go on the offense and see all the things that people reveal and, you know, use it against them in certain cases, right? Let's say that you are a guy who's trying to get custody of your kids, and maybe there's a subpoena for your Amazon history, and we see that you have read a book on magic mushrooms. Well, there you go. Maybe you just lost your kids. So there's all kinds of reasons why you should care about privacy, but if you can't come up with that answer yourself, then I say forget about privacy. You don't understand it, and you don't deserve it.
I can completely understand being in your shoes and thinking, I know there are people out there who understand the value of what I'm doing. Those people will find me one way or another, and I can help those people. But I'm not going to argue. In a way, it was like, it brings me back to the days of the Ron Paul presidential campaigns, because I found myself, I don't generally argue with normies a whole lot, because I in one conversation, I'm not going to reprogram their entire brains, and I could be spending that time more profitably. But I did interact with some normies, and they would be making all these arguments about why they shouldn't be free. After a while, I thought, I don't see that this is a useful thing for me to do. Maybe there'll be something that wakes you up, but I doubt it's going to be this conversation. And maybe I should go do something that'll reach 5,000 people in a matter of seconds who might be teetering on the fence, ready to be able to hear me. But a lot of people aren't ready to hear what I have to say. And, you know, I have only one lifetime and I want to use it as productively as I can. So in a way, now I feel a bit guilty even asking this, but I still would like to have your insights on it. Because I think one thing people might say is there are bad people out there. I mean, this is very much state propaganda. This is the way the state would put it. There are bad people out there and we're just trying to find them. And if we don't have some kind of surveillance tools, we're going to make it much more difficult to keep everybody safe. I hate even saying these stupid words, but I mean, what would be your response to that? I mean, assuming that it's a person of goodwill, let's say this is a person of goodwill who just doesn't know anything.
You're right. Bad people use privacy tools because they work. Now, what these people are suggesting is that we give the bad people, of whom are represented in government as well as outside of government, give these bad people the tools to have access to our stuff. You know, it's kind of a silly argument, but you know, bad people use privacy tools because they work, and they use all kinds of privacy tools, right? They use all kinds of tools. The best tool of bad people is government historically. And so, you know, if you want to start banning tools, we can get rid of cash. We can get rid of the roads that help criminals. We can get rid of all these sorts of things. Oxygen, right? They need to breathe. How far do we want to go with this, right? Are we going to get rid of privacy tools helping a few bad people when it's helping a ton of good people? I'm not willing to do that. And, you know, how far do we want to go with that? Because as I said, the worst human beings are using positions of power, especially in government, to do bad things. So maybe we should abolish government if we want to get rid of the best tools for evil people.
Let's get into electronics. Obviously, there are a lot of different types of electronic questions that I could ask you about, but I think we have to start by maybe touching on the portions of your book that invite us to reframe the way we think about technology and the way we think about the internet and how we use it. Because what you are proposing people do in this book is, you know, as you would concede, quite a dramatic lifestyle change as opposed to what they're accustomed to now, taking advantage of the conveniences of the internet and so forth. And I've had people on to talk about privacy, by the way, before, including Derek Brose. And I thought Derek Brose has some really tough medicine for my listeners on this, and I'm not quite sure they can follow him all the way. Well, you definitely fall into that category. So there are portions of your book in which you say, in effect, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but in effect, that there are some things that we've come to, there's some conveniences here that we've grown very accustomed to the point where now we immediately look to the internet for almost everything, to solve almost any problem. And yet, a lot of these are things that we would be better off knowing how to do ourselves. And some of these are things we'd be better off not doing, period. And so maybe we need to rethink what our relationship is with technology and the internet. So if you could riff on that a little bit, I would be grateful.
Yeah, certainly. So the first thing you want to do if you're pursuing privacy is to start reducing the data that you put out in the world. Anytime you connect to the internet, you're essentially connecting to every other computer on Earth. And there's all kinds of recording and accumulation that is starting to happen. You're relying on third parties anytime you touch the internet. So the first thing you want to do is just start to reevaluate how often you use it. And there's simple things you can do. And this can start very simply. You start to realize, okay, how many social media apps am I using? Do I need all of these? Is it better? Can I meet more people in person? I got out of social media in my personal life the last few years, and I became more social as a result and more informed of the media as a result. So other things like, do you do your taxes online? Well, maybe it might be better to go to your local tax person, or if you have the ability, do it yourself, just so that your taxation data is not part of some data breach. Or maybe you like to have all these apps on your phone, the YouTube app and the Google Maps app and things of this sort. Well, you could reduce some of those and simply look in a browser. Anytime you want to go to YouTube, just have the browser app and go to YouTube, such as Firefox Focus on your phone, and simply start to reduce your reliance on the internet. You don't have to totally get outside of the internet. You see, here I am talking on StreamYard and participating online. I have a Twitter account and all these sorts of things so I can reach an audience, but it is segregated on my computer. I'm running free and open source software. So I'm reducing the amount of data collection that's going on. And I have virtual operating systems within my computer to segment different parts of my life. And if you just start to learn some of the basics, it's not as difficult as you think. You can have the modern conveniences without necessarily fully giving in. So it just starts with that mindset of minimalism and starting to think through, anytime you touch the internet, I'm exposing stuff. So what can I do without today? And how can I change my approach to X thing? And yeah, it just starts from there.
How do you feel the COVID hysteria and the quote-unquote public health response to it vindicated your position on these issues?
Well, I started my podcast, the Watchman Privacy Podcast, during all of that stuff going on, because it became abundantly clear at that point what some of the agendas were out there. And yeah, I mean, we have all the tracking that went on during that time. There's some heinous examples. And I think more troublingly, we saw a lot of people give in to the cult of security, which is what I call this phenomenon, where safety is our number one concern. And as we saw in New Zealand, the prime minister basically said, as long as one person is dying of this, everybody needs to lock down and shut down. And plenty of people agreed with that sentiment. Me, I do not believe in safety. I believe in being dangerous. I think that's much more important. And once you start worshiping on the altar of safety, that's when you start getting into the collectivist ethic, the greater good ethic, and all these terrible things can happen as a result. Central bank digital currencies, the next time there is a pandemic, you can see those being rolled out and all the people talking about how bad CBDCs are now when they're getting their free $5,000 just to sign up to the Federal Reserve app. They'll probably be on board with that. So you can see just a perversion of our morality, nothing less than our morality in the last couple of years.
Then, of course, there were jurisdictions that engaged in contact tracing. I guess a whole bunch of them did, but some were more lackluster than others and some were more determined with it. The whole contact tracing thing turned out to be completely useless anyway, even from a utilitarian standpoint. But the contact tracing thing obviously has to involve knowing a lot about you and where you've been.
Yeah, exactly. And pretty early on, you saw partnerships between Apple and Google. When I see partnerships between Apple and Google to do things like contact tracing, that kind of raises some hair on the back of your neck. And so, yeah, the contact tracing, the idea was simply, look, and this goes into the ethic I was just talking about. Look, if safety is our number one concern, then you have an obligation to do contact tracing. And the contact tracing was forcibly required on the iPhone update. And so it wasn't turned on by default, but you can imagine that in the future being the case. And so, yeah, I mean, what I recommend people do, by the way, when it comes to their phones, is to get off of the Google ecosystem and get off of the Apple ecosystem. One of the best options right now is called Graphene OS, and you can de-Google your phone. So you get
Can you spell that?
Yeah, so Graphene, Graphene OS. Okay. And basically what this does is it gives you an experience similar to Android, but it de-Googles everything and it ensures at a base level that Google services are not running on the phone, and it kind of works from there. But you get out of the Google surveillance net, which doesn't just work for contact tracing, but a lot of people have been caught up in it. There was a guy riding a bike in a crime area and the local police subpoenaed Google to get that data, and they saw this guy riding his bike in this crime area coincidentally. And so they went after this guy, and this guy had to burn through all of his savings just to prove that he was innocent. So de-Googling a phone with Graphene OS can get you outside of that. And so that's the direction I would encourage people to go into, is just stop using big tech. I don't use any big tech for the most part, Tom, except for things like Twitter and such to get out the message. And I operate perfectly fine.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Crowd Health. If there's somebody out there who doesn't find American health insurance frustrating and expensive, well, I haven't met that person. Not to mention claims denials are becoming more common. Did you know that last year, 1 in 5 Obamacare claims were denied? Well, that's why Crowd Health was created. It's not health insurance. It's a better way to pay for health care through crowdfunding. Because let's face it, your insurance policy is opaque, and full of unpleasant surprises, and your premiums are going up every year, so you wind up feeling taken advantage of. Crowd Health is doing things differently. For $175 for an individual or $575 for a family of four or more, you'll get access to a community of people who are willing to help out in the event of an emergency. You'll get access to telemedicine visits, discounted prescriptions, and so much more without doctors' networks getting in the way. And of course, you'll join the crowd, a group of members just like you who want to help pay for each other's unexpected medical events. Let Crowd Health help with your healthcare needs. Get started today for just $99 per month for your first 3 months. Go to joincrowdhealth.com/woods. Crowd Health is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com/woods. That's joincrowdhealth.com/woods. I'm curious to know, was there a particular episode in your life or a particular moment at which you said, that's it, I have to rethink all these questions? Or was it more of a gradual accumulation of examples?
It was gradual. As I erased all of the Marxist garbage that a lot of young people grow up with, I developed a political spine, and I started to realize what the actual threat is in the world, reading history and such. And then as I went along those lines, the libertarian and anarchist lines, I realized that privacy is a huge component of freedom, and maybe there's not a lot of people focusing on it. When I got into the privacy community, I was amazed to see that there were a lot of Marxists in there. And they said things like, I don't care about the government knowing my stuff. I just want to hide from Facebook. And I thought that was terrible. I thought that was horrific. And so one of the things that I've done on my platform is tell people quite correctly that progressives, communists, Marxists, they do not have a claim to privacy. They do not believe in it. Privacy, as I said on Twitter this morning, is only for people who believe in limited government. Everybody else is just hoping.
Let's talk for a minute about cash, because I think it's fairly mainstream, the idea that there's an ongoing war on cash among the political regimes of the world, some more than others. In some parts of the world, some European countries, it's quite advanced. It's quite difficult to pay cash in many cases. Here in the U.S., we're at only an intermediate stage, I would say, in the war on cash. But it takes many forms, and some of the forms might seem neutral or even benign. Like, for instance, the elimination of higher denomination bills. It'll always be presented as keeping you safe. This helps us against drug dealers or whatever. But anything that makes cash marginally less convenient to use means it will be used marginally less often. So little by little, they chip away at it. So this is a kind of softball question. What's the purpose of the war on cash? And what do you recommend people do against it?
Right. So cash is one of these tools of evil people that we referenced earlier. It is the best tool for people doing evil because cash is very private. You just give it to somebody and, you know, they take it and nobody's aware of what's going on. I believe there's a statistic I read that there's more $100 bills outside of the U.S. than inside of the U.S. So people value cash for all kinds of reasons. Now, the war on cash is pretty simple, as you say. If cash is a privacy tool, then you want to limit it. There was a gentleman, one of these, it may have been the World Economic Forum. He was a guy from Mexico, and he basically said, we need a CBDC so that people can no longer make transactions and we don't know what's happening. So it's pretty obvious what the war on cash is about. Now, in terms of fighting against the war on cash, I have lived exclusively on cash for in-person transactions for the last several years. I do not take out my credit cards except when I'm in an airport where I could be going in any particular direction, and only then so that they don't get canceled because credit cards have their use for emergencies. So I would simply recommend people start using cash. Just take out cash and start using it. Otherwise, we are going to lose our ability to have it. Now, other signs of the war on cash, we see that ATM limits are decreasing. Bank branches are disappearing. You see all kinds of bank branches disappearing in the U.S. There are some states where big banks like Bank of America, you can't even find a branch. Like not a single branch in the entire state, maybe in the capital city, maybe in an airport. But these things are diminishing. Of course, if you can't find a bank branch, it's harder to take out your cash. We saw during the COVID times that a lot of places were not accepting cash. They were not giving change. They did not have any coins, supposedly. And so there's all kinds of ways that cash is being attacked. And so I just encourage people, learn how to use an ATM again. Take out cash, right? Your money is not as safe in the bank as you think. Take out the cash and start using it more often. It's pretty simple. And I think you have an obligation right? Especially Christians listening. You've read Revelation, the mark of the beast. You have an obligation to use cash, not just for yourself, but for everybody else, so that this privilege, this privacy tool, is not taken away.
I'm sure most people know, but just so they know, CBDC is central bank digital currency. If you see a company or anything from a restaurant to a service provider announcing that we're going cashless, does that mean, well, then they're going to go without me as a customer?
In most cases, yes. Now, I do carry around with me a prepaid Visa card purchased in cash, which can get me through some scenarios where I simply, okay, I'm at this place, I'm not going to leave, so I'll just use it in this case. But for the most part, yeah, I would, you know, it doesn't make sense to complain to the employees. Sometimes I'll make jokes to the employees like, hey, cashless society, when has that ever gone wrong? And you know, what's funny is they don't understand it, right? People just don't understand even that joke. So yeah, I complain and I will boycott that business pretty hard and I will tweet about that business so other people don't go there. And I think that's kind of just what you got to do.
Let me tease out a little something from what you were saying before. You were mentioning getting your money out of the bank. And some people, I mean, it's a small number, but there are some people out there who call themselves, quote, unbanked. And they may think that even you are not going to the logical conclusion of your beliefs. So talk to me about how you think about banks today and whether or not you should have a bank account.
Okay, that's interesting. So, I mean, banks are a tool that we can use. I think we should use all of the tools at our disposal, and banks are one of them. Now, you could go the full route of going on banks and really get off the grid. I choose to remain on the grid because there are ways to profit and spread the message when you're on the grid. And so that's what I'm trying to do. But you know, what's interesting, Tom, is I had a recent episode on my show with somebody who talks about central bank digital currencies, and they did some research and they found that, you know, one of the talking points of these CBDCs is that there's so many unbanked people. This is a way for them to finally get, you know, these poor people to finally get the banks. But what they found in the survey was that most of these people did not want a bank. And why don't they want a bank? Well, because when you have cash in hand, it's a real thing that you can actually use. And you're not relying on that intermediary who might profile you or do whatever they're going to do. They're not going to let you take out your money. There was a case a couple of years ago. The director of the film Black Panther went to a Bank of America. He requested a certain amount of money and he wrote it down on a piece of paper and gave it to the bank teller. Because he's a public figure, he didn't want to be revealing himself. And they actually called the police on him. So that's the kind of service you can expect from a bank. They consider the money that you put in there to be theirs. And so, yeah, I mean, I would encourage people to use cash and get around banks as best you can. Of course, cryptocurrencies are another great way. But yeah, use whatever tool you have at your disposal.
All right, let's talk about your laptop or desktop computer as opposed to a phone. Maybe it might be helpful for people if you could describe in a way what yours looks like in the sense of from the privacy standpoint, what do you have running on it? Or maybe conversely, what do you not have running on it that might be illustrative for listeners?
Absolutely. So the first thing you have to consider is what is your operating system? The operating system is the software that is running all of your software, right? So maybe you have Windows or maybe you have Mac OS. Now, if you're interested in privacy, I would consider getting away from both of those and moving on to Linux. This is really a very important thing if you care about digital privacy, is you need to learn and start to move over to Linux. I'm running Linux Mint on my computer right now. I'm talking to Tom on StreamYard. I have a Chrome browser here running, no problem. I have all kinds of, and this is the next key, get off of a lot of the mainstream software and start using alternatives that are free and open source software. So I'm looking at my computer here. I have Signal. That's a private messenger. That's free and open source software. I'm using Firefox most times instead of Chrome. That's useful. I have Standard Notes, which is a private messenger. Let's see, I have KeePass XC. This is a free and open source software password manager. I use Kdenlive Live instead of something like Sony Vegas for video editing. So there's all this free and open source software that is, first of all, free to use. It is free in the sense that you own this software. It's not a subscription. And in most cases, you don't have to create an account. It's not collecting a lot of data in general. So the key is to start moving over to free and open source software that has a privacy focus. Start with your operating system. Linux Mint is a great introduction to Linux. And then simply make use of the ample and abundant free and open source software that in general is devoid of a lot of these privacy invasions.
What's the learning curve like with Linux?
So in all of my videos and my tutorials and all the rest, I try to show that when we're looking at a Linux Mint operating system running the Cinnamon desktop, it looks basically the same as Windows. And it has a lot of similar functionality. And for most people, Tom, they're just going to an internet browser anyway, right? And they can do that just as easily on Linux as anywhere else. So I don't think the learning curve is that bad at all. I have gotten older people and parents and the rest onto Linux, and they don't have too much trouble. They see the Firefox or the Chrome logo and they can click on it. And for most people, that's all they need. So I don't think it's a huge learning curve to get into an introductory Linux distribution such as Linux Mint.
I think people probably instinctively understand what the risks are of a data breach involving their login information, whether it's their social media accounts or email or whatever it is. I think people understand the potential difficulties. But on the general subject of financial privacy, what's my main concern if my financial privacy is breached?
Well, your main concern is that somebody gets into your account and they get into your account because, okay, so here's how the data breach works. You trust a company with your real name, your login, your password, other of your personal information, and they say they're going to protect it, which is a fake promise. Even if they have the best security in the world, they are going to get breached eventually because they have so many moving parts, because they're 1 zero-day vulnerability, one bad update away from somebody getting access somehow. They have all kinds of employees. So they're going to get breached. It's an inevitability. When they get breached and a lot of this data is on the dark web, then people can use it to send you phishing emails where they will send you an email pretending to be from your bank and say, hey, log in here, but it's a fake login. Or in some cases, if they take over your email login, like they did with Yahoo, they can actually get into your accounts, right? They can reset your password. They can get into your Coinbase account. They can empty out some of your crypto. And suddenly you become part of this amazing $10 trillion cybercrime statistic. So in general, I recommend people to avoid this. Use two-factor authentication. That's one way to get around it. And to have as simply as few financial accounts as you can. Close out all the ones that you don't need that you're no longer using. Obviously have a lot of cash and assets on your person. And everything else, lock it down with two-factor authentication. And that's really the best you can do, Tom.
Let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, Monetary Metals. Now, there are sponsors and there are sponsors. But with Monetary Metals, not only do I love the service they provide, but I also support it profoundly from a philosophical and economic standpoint. They're trying to do something good in the wake of all the bad that's been done to our money. And of course, in particular, since Richard Nixon in 1971 removed the last vestiges of the gold standard, it's all been downhill for the dollar, losing 90% of its value, government spending's out of control, the debt is surpassing $33 trillion now. We need some kind of a change, but it's not going to come from the top down. It's going to have to come from the bottom up. It's going to have to come from the market. How about a market-based answer to the dishonest money we have now? Well, the answer is indeed Monetary Metals. Monetary Metals enables you to get on your own personal gold standard starting today. Who cares what the Federal Reserve is doing with interest rates when you can earn interest on your gold paid in gold? Earn up to 5% in their gold leasing program, or earn double-digit returns in their gold bonds if you're an accredited investor. I've put my money, my gold, where my mouth is and opened an account with them myself. I've had it for probably 2 years now, and it's time for you to do the same. Join me and our old friend Jeff Deist as we lead an honest money revolution that starts by opening an account at Monetary Metals today. Go to monetary-metals.com/woods to learn more. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. The table of contents for your Watchman Guide to Privacy is extremely compelling. So when I started to, I read the whole thing, but a lot of people, they skip the introduction. They skip that. That kills me because my introductions are good. So they skip that. They don't even look at the table of contents, but I tend to read strategically. So I want a roadmap of the book. So I looked at your table of contents and it just seems like this is, at least from my standpoint, this is the most thorough thing I've ever seen on all this, because it involves your phone, your computer, your house, your car, your finances, and then beyond that, in about as much detail as any ordinary person would need. So given that you've got so much detail in here, let's go to more of a bird's eye view. Suppose you have somebody who is convinced that your message is right, and they've been meaning to lock things down a bit better, and they've been meaning to think more seriously about privacy. Are there two or three initial things that are absolute rock bottom, definite, that they must do before anything else?
I'll answer that by saying that here are the easiest things for people to do, and that is to, first of all, start using private messengers. Signal is the standard right now, so just get onto Signal, get your family onto Signal, and you'll have some nice end-to-end encrypted messaging and phone calling and video calling that you can do on there. So that's pretty convenient. Stop using your SMS text messages. Stop using your Apple messages and all the rest and migrate to Signal. That's easy. That simply requires trying to get some friends who are also interested. After that, you can get into the Tor browser. Just go to the Tor browser, download it. This is a fantastic piece of private internet browsing that if you have sensitive searches you want to do, just start to do them on the Tor browser. That's an easy and free thing to do. You might also at that point get into VPNs. A VPN simply helps you to hide your IP address from your internet service provider. So the ones that I trust are Moldad and iVPN. So you simply get one of these every time you use the internet or every time you feel like it, start up this VPN and know that your internet service provider can now not see the stuff that is happening on your internet browser. So that's pretty handy. Another easy trick, I just tell people, start to avoid having things sent to your house in your name. Take out a post office box, take out a UPS box, and start to use that as an address to receive mail and subscriptions. And if you can, things like your more important accounts, you could try that as well. Sometimes those don't work for those accounts, but simply start to separate your name from your home address. And you can do that in easy ways. You don't have to put your name on your Amazon package when it arrives to your house. I've never used my real name and they always get to me. So just do those few things and you'll be on your way to the privacy lifestyle.
Well, here's, I think, maybe one objection that a discouraged person who might be interested in what you're saying might think. That person might think, every time Gabriel or somebody else tells me about all the data that's being sucked out of me every time I use big tech services is really just making me think the following, that in my ordinary, like normie style use of the internet, I've already exposed myself so much that worrying about privacy now is, you know, is like closing the barn door after the, you know, the animals have all run out. So what do you say to somebody like that?
Let's say that you are overweight and you've been living an unhealthy lifestyle and you say, well, I've already done too much damage to my body. So may as well just keep eating junk and give up. You know, sure, you've done damage to your body. That doesn't mean that, as I think it's Jean-Paul Sartre says, you can always make yourself out of what you've been made into. It is the case that by stopping giving out your data will prevent you from being part of future data breaches. So sure, the damage is done. Now, what are you going to do with that knowledge? Because it's not just one entity that has sucked up all your data. You can get all kinds of privacy moving forward. And if you want to get serious, you could get a, you know, find a new place to live if you're very serious about it and do it in the name of trust or something like that moving forward so that your house is truly separated from your name. That's important for kind of public figures. You can start using private messengers so that all of your messages from now on are not being seen by some big tech juggernaut. So yeah, I mean, I think that if you are forward-looking and you think that what you're doing now and in the future is also important, then yeah, you'll simply start doing privacy stuff. I don't believe in the defeatist attitude, you know? So that's about how I see it.
I know because I went to your website. Tell us the website again.
Website is watchmanprivacy.com.
Okay. In fact, let's see. In fact, I have it. It's one of my tabs open right now. First of all, it's a great site. Looks great. Accomplishes exactly what you want. Elegant simplicity. I'm sorry, it's my nature to make comments on people's websites. But you already mentioned your podcast. I already talked about the book I read because you sent it to me and I was going to ask you for it, but you sent it to me. I appreciate that. The Watchman Guide to Privacy. But you also have courses. So I'm going to assume for people who want to be more like you, if I may put it that way, but it seems like there's just so much to figure out. And maybe they're not very tech savvy. You can help them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that I would encourage you to do is just follow my podcast, The Watchman Privacy Podcast, and that's available pretty much anywhere, and that's free. And we talk about all kinds of basic and also pretty advanced topics, and we do talk about some radical stuff on there. We talk about torrenting. We talk about getting off of big tech. We go in deep into the rabbit hole of private Bitcoin and Monero. I've talked to a homeless guy who talks about his strategies for getting off the grid. So we have a wide variety, a smorgasbord of people on the show. Now, I do offer courses, and this supports somebody who has the correct libertarian / anarchist values, such as me. It also gives you a good overview. So I have two courses, one on how to be hack-proof, as hack-proof as you can be. This is just a quick course, a four-hour course on the fundamentals of not becoming part of that $10 trillion cybercrime statistic. So, I mean, that's required viewing for pretty much any human being who uses the internet. I also have a course on getting private Bitcoin and crypto, which is also awesome. And I have a discount for your audience. So if you use Woods, you will get 25% off of those courses. So that's a way to support me and also get some awesome information, which will certainly help your financial and your otherwise privacy and security in your life.
I just have to ask, Gabriel, when people buy your courses, what forms of payment do you accept?
I will accept any form of payment. So if you don't like the payment processor, which is Stripe on the course, you can email me. The email link is on the bottom of those course listings, and we'll find pretty much any way you want to pay. So yeah, Monero, Bitcoin, we could do cash in the mail, whatever you feel like.
The Bitcoin privacy thing is a bit interesting. I wonder if, as we wrap up, you might say a brief word about that, because I think some newbies years ago when they were getting into Bitcoin, for some reason, I think they thought that Bitcoin just in and of itself would also be an instrument of financial privacy for them. But Bitcoin is actually quite transparent in terms of being a payment network. So when you talk about Bitcoin privacy, what do you mean?
Yeah, so there's a lot of points there, but let me see if I can boil it down. I have recently started interviewing and discussing with the top Bitcoin privacy minds in the world, such as Samurai Wallet, et cetera. And the truth is that if you have Bitcoin attached to your name at some point, then yeah, there are companies that can connect you on the blockchain, which is a transparent blockchain. It can connect your name through your transactions eventually to your name. So that's not good. If you get Bitcoin the true and the only correct way, which is the non-KYC way, right? If you own Bitcoin in Coinbase, you don't own Bitcoin. You don't own Bitcoin correctly. So if you own Bitcoin in a non-KYC way, which involves getting it from somebody else, then you basically have private Bitcoin. Now, there are some ways you can expose yourself using it, and that's what we talk about on my show. But in general, that is private Bitcoin. I do think that the Bitcoin is a surveillance coin is overplayed when you look into the details, especially by the Monero people whom I love. But Bitcoin has a lot of privacy baked into it. It is a great way to transact outside of the banking system. And it was created by an anarchist, Satoshi. And it is the best tool we have for, I would say, financial freedom and possibly financial freedom in the world today. So anybody who's listening, if you're a libertarian anarchist, you have to know about Bitcoin. No excuses.
All right. Well, once again, the website is watchmanprivacy.com. So check that out. And with the courses, remember, use coupon code WOODS for a nice discount. Did you say 25%?
Yes, 25%.
That's a nice chunk. So use coupon code WOODS. It never fails. It fails sometimes, but in all the goods and services you want, code WOODS will come in handy. Well, Gabriel, I appreciate your time here. And of course, I know this could definitely have been a Joe Rogan style interview for 3 hours. There's no doubt about that. But in a way, I guess I kind of wanted to dip people's toes into this subject. And some people will say that this is not for me at all. And other people will say, I need to know more. And so you'll sift out those people. And I hope they'll start to follow you at watchmanprivacy.com, listen to your podcast, consume your information. So thanks so much once again.
Absolutely. And everybody stay dangerous out there.
Thank you so much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.